Welcome to this Market Commentator podcast. It is MoneyWeb's weekly podcast where I speak to leading investment professionals. The guest today is Tshepo Modiba. He is the CEO of Sereti Asset Management. Tshepo, welcome to the show. Last week, we've seen an interest rate hike and the anomaly that the rand strengthened, as it should do, but the market also saw some upside, which it shouldn't do. How do you currently read the market?
It's a great question. The investor or storyteller in me wants to say it was really driven by global factors. The rand probably, not the rand per se, but the underlying market probably gained direction from international movements rather than the interest rate hike, which was, to be fair, only 25 basis points. So not a material increase, but an increase nonetheless.
But we can talk about the interest rate increase. We definitely, I think the Reserve Bank is preparing itself for a hike across the Atlantic, mm-hmm. which would again impact a lot of equity markets around the world. What do you expect when we actually see the US, pressing the button and hiking rates?
Again, I think it's not necessarily the action of when they start, and I think by all expectations it will be in December. So if they don't, quite a bit of volatility after that fact. But certainly after that, I think it's more a case of the trajectory of interest rates in the US rather than when they begin the process. And I don't anticipate, given that there's no inflation pretty much out of the US, and I still think that underlying economy is fairly fragile, whilst the economic momentum in the US is a little bit better than elsewhere in the world, specifically developed markets, I think you can make a strong argument that it's still quite fragile. So I don't expect very drastic movements from the Fed at all.
The big theme of this year has been volatility, especially in emerging markets, but also in the developed markets. What do you foresee for the short and medium term for, first of all, international markets and maybe for the JSE as well?
I think a continuation of that theme. And I think it's really driven by the market looking for some sort of direction. So data points have been quite mixed. You have some positive economic performance out of the US and then seemingly a soft patch out of China at the same time. So I think that's really what's driven this big spurt in volatility across the world. And the emerging markets in particularly because I guess the largest commodity consumer is experiencing, on the face of it, a slowdown. But again, 6.5% economic performance out of China isn't too bad, given that they're still producing more output at 6.5% than they were at 14% in 2007.
Do you believe that number?
Yes and no. Look, I think when you look at the underlying businesses, or every business that I've looked at that is operational in China, the truth is the sales figures are increasing quite dramatically. Profitability is still looking pretty good. So if they're lying about it, then all of those other companies are lying about it too.
Let's talk a bit about Sereti Asset Management. What is your history and what is your investment philosophy?
So we started out in 2013, and the focus of the business has really been, or the purpose was to build a business that both represented our investment thesis, but also our value set as a business. So we are very proud of the name Sereti itself.
It means shadow.
It means, the simple meaning is shadow. I guess the closest English word is gravitas. So when someone, I talk about my grandmother, speaks about someone who carries themselves with Sereti, it's someone who's implicitly impressive, but carries themselves with a certain humility and dignity.
You currently manage one fund, which interestingly enough is an international fund, and you don't have a local fund. Why are you only focusing on the international market?
It's really a function of the team's experience. So the portfolio managers within the business, including myself, have in our careers been focused on the offshore side, and it just makes sense for us to roll that out for the business. Having said that, it's also in our mind a good growth area for the business, or the market in general. Firstly, because of exchange control relaxation, more demand for foreign investment, but also on the pension fund side, relaxation of Reg 28, so you can now take up to 25% of your assets offshore. And I think it creates a compelling case to have talented market participants, and we think that South African managers are probably right up there with some of the best in the world, and it gives us the opportunity to compete with the rest of the world.
How big is the fund?
Still quite small in the scheme of the market as an aggregate, but we're hoping to gain traction from some of the larger players within the industry. So we're talking to the bigger funds, the likes of PIC, to hopefully get a bit more traction into the business.
How much funds are under management?
Less than $1 billion.
Let's talk about the international fund. Your investments are definitely skewed towards the USA. Why is that the case?
It's simply a case of if you're targeting an international benchmark, the US is what, 52 or 53% of the MSCI all countries, 57% of the MSCI world. So if you're running a global portfolio, you can't say, I don't like the US because it's overvalued, so I'm not going to buy anything there. The truth is, it's a question of how much to allocate to the US rather than whether you're going to allocate to the US at all.
Your biggest investments there are Johnson & Johnson and GlaxoSmithKline. Why do you like those stocks?
Johnson & Johnson in particular. So Glaxo is in the UK. Johnson & Johnson in particular, the business is split into three. So there's the underlying pharmaceutical business, the consumer brands that we all know and familiar with as well. And then finally, the medical devices business. And each of those are gaining traction, particularly in the emerging world. So their core market of the US is quite stable and growing solidly. But gaining quite a bit of traction in emerging markets. And then from a margin perspective, Johnson & Johnson actually has industry-leading margins. So for every bit of growth that they can generate, underlying profitability is a little better than their peers.
You also have some appetite for emerging markets outside Africa. You've mentioned you like the valuations on markets like Singapore, Hong Kong, Thailand. Why is this the case?
Well, firstly, there's some phenomenal businesses in those markets, world-class businesses that are actually industry-leading in what they do. So one of the businesses that we own is Lazy Boy's biggest competitor, actually is the second largest player in the U.S. in particular. So from a competition perspective, these are businesses that can compete with some of the best in the world. But there's this blanket rule that emerging markets is a bad place right now. So valuations have pulled back quite dramatically. An investor's perspective, in our mind, it's the perfect place where you've got depressed valuations, but phenomenal businesses. I'll take that every day of the week.
One of your big holdings there is the Hong Kong Electric. Tell us about Hong Kong Electric.
Sure. A stable business in the Hong Kong market. They've got roughly 20% of the market as a whole. Unlike our utility business here, they've had less than an hour power disruption over the last 5 years in aggregate, which is impressive, right? So 97% supply in terms of that. A business that has a very stable balance sheet from a margin perspective, there's a very clear outlook in terms of the underlying profitability that they make, given that the state actually, or state-owned utility, owns 20% of this business. So a great outlook, decent valuations, so a stable, solid business.
What has the performance been of your international fund?
Right. So the track record's not too long in terms of the fund itself, but we've been fortunate enough to be about 1.5% ahead of other MSCI countries, which is interesting given our very large overweight position in the emerging markets, which we all know have been quite volatile of late, and a big underweight in the US. But our underlying stock picks have added quite a bit of value. So we're quite excited around the potential when the market stops being driven by what the US Fed is doing and really starts looking at the underlying fundamentals of businesses across the world.
Is it RAND-denominated?
I actually don't think that actually matters, right? What the currency that you report in is, whatever you choose to report in. What really matters is the underlying earnings that the businesses derive. So we can report it in pretty much whatever the underlying client wants.
Are you looking at launching a fund focused on the JSE?
At some stage in the business, the truth is our ambition is to become the largest asset management firm on the continent.
And that's very ambitious.
Well, you have to have big goals, right? Big goals. So the idea is that at some stage we'll be a fully fledged business across all asset classes, including local equities, property, really across the board. But what we are trying to do is really solidify our position as the foremost global equity player in the country. And then from there, we'll look at offering other offerings.
I just want to talk about black-owned asset management firms. And I stumbled upon the research from 27.4, which seemed to be a very comprehensive piece of research. And although there are many small black-owned firms, more than 30 of them in the market, the industry or the segment is dominated by two firms who own collectively more than 50% of around 310 billion of assets under management. And the biggest 10 firms manage 91%.
Sure.
What are the dynamics of this, the black-owned asset management industry?
I think the tricky bit is that there's some phenomenal businesses within that. I shouldn't say that because it's our competitors. But in terms of performance, if you look at some of our peers, probably some of the best performance in the country, period. Never mind in the black space. Some of the best managers in the country, period. And I think because they've been, or we've been collectively painted with the black-owned businesses, the allocations that these firms get is relatively small because black businesses are seen as businesses to incubate rather than core managers in your investment product. But I think it's gradually, that picture is gradually changing as performance and the teams that are really impressive and can compete with all of the firms in the country, as that becomes clear that it's actually irrelevant that they happen to be black.
Having said that, 4.4% of the investment and savings industry is invested through some of those firms.
Sure.
And what is the pressure like in the industry? If you compare it, for example, to the mining industry, where there's a massive focus on empowerment, it doesn't seem to be as amplified or as stringent in the financial services industry.
I think the pressure is growing, thankfully. And as again, I emphasize that if you look at underlying performance, performance has been phenomenal. And certainly the performance and the teams don't warrant just a 4% allocation of the broader market. So I think that's really the thing that's driving the pressure, that you've got businesses that are actually doing quite well and that their underlying investors are being rewarded, but the broader market isn't allocating to them.
Is the allocation accelerating?
Gradually. I think as industry participants, we would all like that process to speed up a bit more. Again, I think there's still this mindset that if you're a black-owned business, it must be that you an incubator type program and need a smaller allocation. But the truth is, most of the individuals that are working within the space have been in the industry for a hell of a long time and have earned their stripes and are doing pretty good things at their businesses.
If you look at some of the big funds out there, the PIC, you know, the Government Employees Pension Fund, are they the typical funds that would allocate money to smaller asset managers?
I think traditionally they've started the process out without the likes of the PIC. Eskom Pension Fund is another. I think the black-owned space getting to the 300 billion would have been particularly difficult. So they've been the first movers. But I think even at that level, there's a demand from their side to increase their allocation. And not just because of transformation, but because these businesses are good at what they do.
Chepo, thank you for coming in and good luck with Seriti Asset Management.
Thank you.
That was Chepo Modiba. He's the Chief Investment Officer of Seriti Asset Management.